Welcome to the Run Strong podcast, episode 135. Rob Jones, we're wearing similar colored t-shirts.
Mm-hmm.
And we're both pretty fired up for this one.
You've actually changed. You were in black earlier, but you've gone light. I don't think I've ever seen you in this color.
It's not even an NFL shirt.
It's not a work t-shirt. Gift. You've gone gift. Civvies.
Gift. I got home, was feeling a little bit, not tired, a little bit tired. I was like, oh, what I'm going to do here is I'm going to just jump in my deep freeze. So I had a quick sit in some cold water. Suddenly you feel re-energized, ready for the afternoon. And here we are recording the podcast.
How long did you do?
5 minutes.
Ooh, 5 minutes and 5 degrees.
Yeah. Well, it's in the middle of the day here as well, right? So I can just sit outside and it's still, my head's boiling hot.
Your head's sweating, but your body's shivering.
Mate, how are we doing? 1 week on.
Okay, we had an interesting chat earlier. You got me thinking deeply. You asked me some hard questions that were challenging, shall we say? Got some challenging, well, you, yeah, just made me think.
Monday, isn't it?
Put me in awkward places. Thanks for that.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Body-wise?
Body-wise is getting better. Slowly but surely, every day, a little bit better.
Nice.
Not running yet, not doing any strength yet, just relaxing, which is
just
fine.
Waiting for Chamonix, waiting for the croissants.
I think you need to relax as long as possible before that.
Mate, today's show, we said we'd have a guest, and we do.
You've got a good guest.
Good guest. Today's show is all about tendons, what they are, how we injure them, how we get them better. Quite relevant for me at the moment, but also, yes, I think for a lot of our listeners. We're talking to Steph Davies, who's sounds Welsh, lives in Wales, but isn't Welsh. There you go. Actually lives over in Ceredigion. If anyone knows West Wales, we've just had a chat. She lives in Ceredigion, which is very close to my niece.
We're so excited talking. Since you said, I live in Wales, that was it. And oh God, here we go.
Super happy. So Steph is coming on, going to talk to us all about tendons, rehabbing, what happens when we injure them, what should we be doing, ice, no ice, all that sort of thing. And guys, if you want to get in touch with Steph, she works for a company which is called treatmyachilles.com, which you'll never guess how I found them. But you can go straight over to their website and yeah, they are very easy to book in with. They have some great videos on YouTube, all discussing the information that you'll learn in today's show.
Yeah, definitely.
So here is Steph. Steph, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Your first ever podcast. Very excited we're the first.
Yeah, good. I'm excited to talk to you about tendons because I'm part of a group of tendon geeks who love talking about and treating tendons. So
that's why you're here. There's only a few select people on this planet that love tendons as much as you guys. And I thought I have to get one of them on the show.
I don't think we've ever had anyone on who's so excited about tendons.
Oh, no. Well, yeah, but excited, but also I think we bring a dose of reality, I would hope as well. So, yeah.
Do you know what it is? I don't mean to bring it up again, but when you live in Ceredigion, there's so little going on there that tendons are fascinating to you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. But also running. So that's good too.
Yeah. Steph, tell us first, you do run. What kind of running do you do?
Well, actually, funnily enough, I had to rehabilitate myself from Achilles tendon trouble a couple of years ago or a year or so ago. And now I am just thrilled to just be out running. So yesterday I ran 8 miles around where I live, which is the middle of nowhere. I saw nearly no one and no cars went past and it was beautiful. And I was just so happy.
Amazing. Hey, the benefit of fuel prices going up, less cars on the road for you.
Yeah, maybe. I think there's just no people here, actually.
That's true.
Why the online work suits me quite well, actually.
You are the population of a county.
Basically.
People know. Okay, so what a great place to start. So just because, you know, you're obviously a tendon specialist. I mean, we see so many tendon injuries. Let's start with why that is. Like, what is a tendon? What's it doing for us? And why does it seem to get injured so much?
Okay, so at the very basic level, a tendon connects your muscle to your bone. Your muscle is the one that does all the work and it can contract, it can lengthen, it can change in size. A tendon doesn't contract or lengthen. It is more like the rope that attaches that muscle to your bone, so that when the muscle contracts, it pulls your bone to move it. And tendons come in different shapes and sizes. There's different ones for different jobs. For example, the Achilles tendon, if we talk about that, that's the biggest tendon, like thickest anyway, strongest tendon in the body. It takes all of your weight and an awful lot of load. Some studies have shown that when you're running, the ground reaction force can be up to 6 or even 12 times your body weight, depending on what study you look at. So there's a lot of load that it can take. It's a big, strong structure. So obviously, the more you use it, there's always like the potential that you might at some point overuse it and it can become a problem. Whereas you've got other little tendons, say around your ankle, like your tibialis posterior tendon on the inside of the ankle, your peroneal tendon on the outside of the ankle, those don't have the same job. They're smaller and their job is to stabilize mostly. So they have different jobs, which is why the rehab for these sorts of problems has to be a bit different depending on what you've injured. You're right, it's really common. So I think this, I was just checking on my, getting my facts right, but it can occur, Achilles tendon trouble can occur in about 43% of all elite track and field athletes. So that's a lot. Mm. 83% of those tend to be middle distance runners. And then when you talk about people doing the longer distances like Ironman, then that can go up to sort of 56% of Ironman distance runners will have probably tendon trouble at some point. So wow, it's a high percentage. But then that said, it doesn't have to be running. So you've got the general population. It's quite common. Achilles tendinopathy is quite common in them too. And some of them are not very active at all. So it can be in about 65% of the general population that get Achilles tendinopathy is not due to sport at all. So we know from that it's not necessarily all about like sporty load. Sometimes it is just load itself, whether it's too much or not enough or just right, basically.
That's really interesting. if someone's sitting listening to this, they're on the drive home, they feel like they've got an Achilles tendon injury, how do they know the difference between a tendon injury and maybe like a calf strain or something that's more muscular or completely unrelated?
Yeah, it's a good question. Well, I think you've got to categorize how long ago it started. So has it just come on in the past week or so? And also, how has it come on? So let's say it's come on for no real reason at all. You can't remember an incident where it started. It just started hurting out of the blue for no good reason. That might be the beginning of more of an overuse tendon thing. It could equally be DOMS. I mean, if you've had a heavy workout and you're aching the next day, you know, you could have delayed onset of soreness, which doesn't mean anything at all. But if it's sort of lingered there for longer than a few days, like you would expect DOMS to disappear after a few days, then it might be the start of a tendinopathy. Now, the difference here is that at different stages of a tendinopathy, what the tendon is doing at a tissue level is different, so you treat it differently. And if you were just go back to your question, if you're comparing it to like a calf strain, well, you would know when you strained your calf because it would suddenly have tightened up on you or suddenly have, you know, you'd felt it gone. So you would be able to pinpoint, oh yeah, it's when I pushed off that time up the hill, or it's when I jumped out of the shower and ran and then it went. Anyway, you would be able to pinpoint that. So again, that would be an acute injury and you would treat that different to say someone then on the opposite end of the scale who's had a grumbly Achilles for years and they've managed to run through it. It's giving them jip, but it's not bad enough to stop them. And they're very different in how you would treat them and approach them, those two situations. Is it acute? Have you just injured it? Is it an overuse thing or is it a tear? And then opposite end of the scale, has this been going on for blimmin' ages and you're just about holding it together, which is, again, something you need to sort out. But
following on from that then, you mentioned right at the start where you wake up and you can feel that something's not right.
Yeah, yeah.
At what stage is it best then to go and seek someone like yourself who can support it? And how much then could you almost self-treat before you seek professional?
Absolutely. Right. Well, if it's brand new and you've woken up and you you're struggling to put your foot on the floor because your tendon's hurting in your Achilles or the heel, or even same with like something that plantar fascia, you get up and you're hobbling a bit, you walk down the stairs and you look like you're about 80, but you're actually only in your 30s. Then this is the sort of time when you could actually just stop, offload it, stop run, don't run that week, you know, don't do stuff like jumping and hopping and things that's, or box jumps or, you know, anything where you're going to be really hurting that, and use a common sense approach. I think it's not a case that if you don't run, you're going to suddenly not be able to run in 2 weeks' time. When it's very acute, that's when you could probably offload it. It will calm down. And then you need to unpick why it might have happened in the first place. And typically it will be a sudden change, either in training intensity or volume or type. So I think there's something like six, I think one study quoted that 60 to 80% of Achilles tendon problems come from a change, a sudden change in training. So it might be that someone's decided, right, I'm getting quite good at running. I'm going to join a running club. I'm going to do hill sprints. And they're not used to doing hill sprints. And sure enough, a couple of weeks later, the Achilles starts hurting. Or someone who's decided, yeah, you know, they're going to train for this ultra marathon. They're going to train every day. And therefore, you don't have the recovery you need. And that tendon is trying hard to keep up, but sometimes it can't keep up. It starts degenerating instead of regenerating. And that's how you end up in trouble. So yes, if it's brand new, you offload it, calm it down, and then build yourself back in gradually. However, if it isn't brand new and it's been grumbling on for a few weeks and it haven't managed to get it to go get better yourself, then that's when you probably do need a little bit of help to try and get it better. Yeah.
When, just to go a bit more into deeper dive into tendons, when we say they attach muscle to bone, obviously your muscle attachment will look a little bit different to the bone side attachment, or do they look the same? And is there, are you likely to injure more towards the muscle or more towards the bone?
So when you strain a muscle, like pull a muscle, like you described, like the calf strain, that tends to be more towards where the muscle attaches to the tendon, or what you call the musculotendinous junction. I like just sticking Latin in there. Even you could just say muscle tendon junction, but you know. And then where it attaches to the bone, that's what you call an enthesis in the medical language. So that's where it is a bit different, and you get a different sort of load there too. In Achilles tendons, just to bring it back to Achilles, being an Achilles geek, then the prevalence of, say, an insertional, so that's where it attaches to the bone, tendon problem, is like kind of 20-25% of the time. In the middle of the tendon is kind of 65% of the time. And then up where it attaches to the muscle is down at sort of 9%, depending on the study again. So it's less common that you would have an overuse tendinopathy at the muscle tendon junction. It's more common that you would have it in the middle of the tendon or where it attaches to the bone.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's just where the load tends to fall, really. And it's different for different people too. But you tend to find that the mid portion, which is the most common, is usually where you end up having the most load going through. And we know it's a loading problem, and the tendon is what we call mechanoresponsive. It responds to load. So it's all about.
And then if we're, just because a tendon is obviously taking a lot of the strain between the muscle and the bone, it might not necessarily go when you would imagine it is going to get injured, right? Like we might be running and everything's fine, but then you do something else that it's not used to that causes it to get an injury.
So I'm just to clarify, I'm mostly talking here about overuse tendon injuries, i.e. tendinopathy, i.e. it used to be called tendonitis. Itis means inflammation. They decided it wasn't inflammatory, so now they call it tendinopathy. It's the same thing. That's different to a tendon tear. So, tendinopathy tends to be all right when you're running, or it might even be a bit iffy at the beginning, or a bit sore at the beginning, and then it will warm up and you'll be able to run through it. And then later that day it'll be sore, and the next morning it'll be sore. So it's like a delayed onset of symptoms. Whereas a tear, that will usually, again, be the an incident you remember doing, or overstretched it on that verge, or, you know, I did something specific that overstretched it and it hurt. That's different, because that will hurt straight away and it will hurt all the time. Mm. So, you can injure it in either way, but I'd say the most common and the most bothersome really would be the, aside from rupturing your Achilles entirely, which is not good, but no. The most bothersome for the most amount of runners would be the tendinopathy, really, the overuse one. Yeah.
Okay. So how's this? I tore mine kicking a ball, and yeah. I tore it in the middle, and I tore a little bit of the insertion where the it goes into the muscle.
Must have been a really good kick.
It was terrible. It was a terrible kick. Ball for the dog. But I was walking with someone at the time, and as I put my foot back down, I just went, oh, that doesn't feel good. But then carried on walking, and then didn't run for about 2 months, but then developed tendinopathy post tear. So how does a tendinopathy develop if it's not a kind of like I had, like torn it, then the tendinopathy developed? What's the red light if we see, like, how many times does it need to feel sore for us to think, okay, I think I'm getting a tendinopathy here? Because if someone doesn't tear it or have a notable time that something happened, they're kind of going to keep on just thinking, nah, it's okay, I can run. And then the next day it feels a bit niggly, but nah, it's okay, I'll be fine and run again. Like, what would you say are the big warning signs?
I would say if you're thinking that, like, oh, still not better, after just a couple of weeks, when you would expect it should be better, see someone then, because the sooner you see someone, the quicker it gets better. So if I go back to that tendon sort of tissue structure that I was sort of touching on earlier, your tendons are ordinarily a nice, like, arrangement of collagen fibers. So imagine like a bunch of uncooked spaghetti that's straight, all in a nice, like, rope-like organization. And if you acutely flare it up, now yours is a bit different, kicking your ball for your dog, because if you did manage to tear it, I suspect you would have had a little bit of grumbling going on behind the scenes without you noticing before you tore it, to have that weakness in the structure in it, to be able to tear it doing such a low, like, you know, innocuous thing as kicking a ball for your dog. So sometimes with tendons, you can get a little bit of degenerative change, sorry to say, asymptomatic without you really noticing it. And then something like that will either injure it for apparently no good reason. It might have been coming on for a while.
Well, I'm one of your 56% in your athletic population. So anyway,
when you acutely then overload it, so in your situation, it could be that you let the tear get better, you perhaps went back a bit too soon or too quickly for actually what the tendon could cope with. And this is something I have to say to people quite often. You can't then compare what you think is normal for you to what is okay for it when it's rehabbing. So you might be like, 5K running might be an absolute breeze for you normally, but when you're injured and you're coming back from an injury, 5K is an awful lot of landing and pushing off for an injured tissue. So it could be that, you know, the tear healed, but then because then it was weak, it couldn't cope with the running you were doing, then it developed a tendinopathy. And what happens there is, in the acute stages, in the first few weeks, the structure is actually all right, but it's thicker, it's a little bit, it's brought in lots of sort of biochemicals that have made it a bit thicker, a bit irritable, not very happy. However, if you keep running on it, because you can, and it hurts, but it's sort of okay to carry on, you just about get through, then those spaghetti fibers become a little bit more disorganized. So rather than the straight spaghetti in a nice bunch, it becomes a bit more like cooked spaghetti, where it's all a bit wiggly and it's not in a good order. And that's when they call it disrepair, because your body's like, right, I know there's something wrong with this tendon. I know I need to fix it, but I'm not sure how. And then you end up in this cycle where you, instead of getting stronger, it kind of gets a bit weaker and a bit more unhappy. And that's when you really do need to do something about it. Whether or not you're one of the lucky ones who can watch a YouTube video and get yourself better, or if you can't, then you need to probably come and see one of us, really.
Yeah. So, okay. So we've got, if we see a sign of maybe some swelling, which means that the fibers of the tendon have got a bit crossed, let's say, or because they're not in their nice straight lines that they should be, maybe some fluid's being kept within the tendon and isn't draining. And then is it also, it's going to be quite tender to touch?
Yeah, it can be, not always, but yeah, it can well be. Yeah.
Okay.
And if it is tender to touch, don't keep poking at it just to see if it's still tender to touch, because that doesn't help either.
Okay. So this isn't a good question, because a lot of people still do it and it's putting ice on it.
Yeah, right.
Is that going to be good thing, bad thing? Some people are like, ice is great. Other people do not ice injuries now. What are we supposed to do?
The research on ice changes quite frequently, actually. The most recent thing is that actually, you know, it's okay for pain relief. So, you know, when your tendon is sore and it's achy and you put some ice on it and it feels nice. That's about the extent of it, because it doesn't actually change the long-term physiology of what's going on. So you don't need to be icing it regularly in the hope that that's going to magically make it better, because it won't. Mm. It'll make it hurt less for the 10 minutes you have the ice on. And then that's about it, really. So it's useful, but it doesn't, you know, it's not a treatment. So
okay.
Just, yeah.
So the rest ice compression elevation with tendons is not what we should be aiming for.
No. I mean, if it's a tear rather than a tendinopathy, then yes, probably you need to rest it. You can ice it if you like, it won't make much difference. You can compress it if you like, again, it won't make a great deal of difference. But you would treat it like a tear, an acute, any other acute soft tissue injury. If it's a tendinopathy though, there is something that will have caused that, that we need to, that's what we need to delve down into. And it's very, if it's very obvious to the person, like say, oh yeah, you know, I ran every day in January because of some charity event and now my Achilles hurts, so in February I'm not going to run every day, oh, it's better, that's all right. But if you can't quite put your finger on it, or you're not sure whether your training's right or not, or, you know, that's where we can help. We can unpick what you do every day. Sometimes it's people's jobs. Sometimes it's footwear. You know, there's all sorts of things, you know, and everyone's different. And I think that's another important point to make, that there are lots of, there's different rehab protocols out there, generally following a similar theme, really, but everybody is different. Everyone's an individual. And if I was going to get really excited about something else, I guess it would be that, you know, we're living creatures at the end of the day. We're not robots, and everybody is different. And there are loads of things that feed into the physiology of what's going on, and either help healing or don't help healing, that aren't mechanical. You know, I said it's all loading, but that'd be a lie. I suppose there's things like hormones that can play into things, you know, ladies going through menopause, that screws all sorts of things up. You know, if people have had certain antibiotics, there's like these types of antibiotics called fluoroquinolones that aren't always used, but sometimes they have a real negative side effect on tendons. And then there's other things like just generally age, you know, stuff just doesn't get better as quickly when you're older, unfortunately. It still will get better probably, but, you know, and other medications as well that can play into it, and diet and stress and sleep, you know, so many things. So I think I've gone completely on a tangent now, but anyway, I think what I was trying to say was that there's lots of things that feed into it. If you're not getting anywhere, it's not obvious, then you really should see someone, because the sooner you see them, the quicker you can get on the right path back to running.
As we age, do our tendons sort of follow the same trajectory as our muscles? And that we start to degenerate, and is it sort of a 1-to-1 ratio, or do the tendons hang on a little bit longer?
Everything degenerates, I think, a little bit as you age, unfortunately. I like to, you know, for people who can't visualize that, think of skin, right? It's nice and smooth and it's nice and elastic when you're young, and it kind of gets a bit wrinkly and a bit slower to heal when you're older. The same with everything else, really. It's not that things don't heal, it's just that the tissue turnover is slower.
Yeah.
And I think also as people age, they along with it comes a bit more comorbidity, you know, as in they have other illnesses or other medications they take or other conditions that might interact or interfere with tissue healing. So, doesn't mean you can't get better, just expect it to take a bit longer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's go back to you. I think your point on how people are kind of living every day, having an effect on tendon injuries is a brilliant one, because a lot of people look for something to blame that maybe isn't in their, not so much in their control. You know, like, oh, I ran a bit extra on this run, but I did it because the group was doing it and now I'm a bit sore here. And you're like, oh yeah, well, maybe it could be your footwear. No. I've worn the same shoes for 5 years. It's not that. Yeah. What have you seen in your experience to be almost predictors of getting into trouble, let's say, with Achilles injuries? So I know, like, for women, wearing high heels is not great for lower leg mechanics, right?
Yeah. Equally, there's a real trend, isn't there, for zero drop shoes and minimalist running trainers.
Yeah.
Which is great for other joints and things, but the reason it's great for other joints and things is because what takes all the load? Well, it's actually your calf, your Achilles, and to some extent your plantar fascia. So that whole, that lower leg is under more strain. It doesn't mean it's bad for Achilles, but just, again, it means you have to take that bit longer to be able to get conditioned enough to be able to tolerate wearing the zero drop shoes again.
So
I see lots of those.
What about carbon? Have you seen anything change with the introduction of carbon shoes now?
No, but they're brilliant, aren't they? I mean, I don't have a pair myself, but they sound like they're definitely cheating. But no, I think that's interesting, because that's only a sort of reasonably recent thing. From the people that I've been speaking to, they tend to use those mainly for racing. So it makes sense to me. You use that for a race, get some stonking time that's better than you would have got otherwise. But when you're training, you know, you just have to have the right, you have to have the right conditioning. So actually, almost it's better to train in normal trainers, isn't it? And then save your...
We tend to see a lot of guys training in carbon shoes as well, or especially on the beach track, you see lots of people training in carbon shoes. So I was just wondering
that's,
if
that's because you're in Dubai, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, Dubai
thing.
You know, Dubai. Just to add, Crocs, can we say Crocs are bad so people stop wearing those?
Well, they're very unfashionable, I suppose, aren't they?
Crocs?
Not being a fashionable person myself, I wouldn't really know any better. Well, I wouldn't, you know, people don't train in Crocs, do they?
I'd hope not. I just want to get them banned in general. Oh, right. But that's petition for another time.
There's any harm in just walking around your flat in Crocs or whatever.
In Crocs. What about flip flops? I know a lot of physio practitioners aren't keen on people wearing flip flops a lot.
Yeah, I'm not one of those people really. I don't flip flop myself.
Okay.
You know, so, like, from an injury point of view, the main problem with the flip-flop is that, one, because it's not attached to your foot, your toes scrunch a little bit. So, you know, you could argue it hurts, you know, you can overuse underneath your foot a little bit. But also, well, flip-flops are just never designed to walk long distances in anyway, are they? You'd get the rubby, you know, rub between your toes, isn't it? So just don't do that. That's stupid.
And probably the most time that people are wearing flip-flops is when they go on holiday and they're exploring and they're walking further than they probably would do normally.
And they're flat most of the time. They're flat, aren't they? And if people are used to having a supportive trainer, a bit of arch support, a bit of a heel, then suddenly going to a flat flip-flop for miles is just, it's just not going to end well, is it? So I have seen some people show me some right, like, Gucci kind of flip-floppy type things you can get now that are made by the usual running trainer brands that seem to be a bit more supportive, so perhaps they're a good idea. But if we go on to sort of the very unfashionable kind of what you would call Jesus creepers or sandals or whatever, they sometimes have a heel, obviously, I mean a strap behind the heel. Now if you're suffering from an Achilles sort of insertional or even like lower mid portion problem, people have to be aware that that strap isn't then digging in. I mean, it's just so simple, but can be a real problem.
I think a lot of people who wear those kind, though, they wear socks as well.
So it cushions it a bit.
Cushions it a little bit. Maybe that's the reason. Maybe we now know why those people wear socks with their sandals.
Maybe.
I feel we're going off track slightly.
You're going to offend lots of your listeners.
Let's get on to some rehab. I know you said not everyone is the same, which is, and everyone has different lives, different lifestyles, different training programs.
Yeah.
But somebody wakes up, they realize they've got themselves a bit of tendinopathy. They know they're going to stop running, or they're disciplined enough to stop running and stay off the foot as much as possible. Is there any generic, I know you said everyone's different, but is there any generic go-to movements or treatments that people can use to get the rehab on the way before perhaps seeing someone like you?
Yeah, right. This is, I could talk all day on this, but I'm not gonna because we haven't got time. But yeah, so remember, if it's just happened, if it's new, none of these rehab protocols are for you, right? Actually, what you need to do is just settle it down and then build back up in a gradual way.
Yeah.
These rehab protocols, so you might have, if you Google it, you'll see Alfredson. He's very famous. He does the eccentric rehab protocol. And then there's another chap, Silbernagel, who does something similar, but less so eccentric, more general progressive loading. They are mostly aimed at people who have the chronic sort of tendons. So the tendons that aren't new to being sore, they have been there for a while. And this is where I think people get muddled up, because they Google it, they see these rehab protocols, they've got a newly acute injured tendon, and all that does is it flares it up. So I would say the first thing, generic thing to do, is if you've just injured it, don't do a rehab protocol. Rest it, get it better, and then get back to running. Because as soon as you start overloading an already overloaded tendon, and you start stretching it off a step when it's telling you it's not happy, it just gets worse. So that'll be the first thing.
Can you define rest for me? Because people will interpret rest completely differently. So
right.
Does rest mean
really
full relaxing, no training whatsoever, or can they get up and do things?
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. And actually, I was thinking that as soon as I said it. yeah, so rest needs to be what we call relative rest. And you have to use a bit of common sense. If something doesn't hurt when you're doing it and it doesn't hurt afterwards, that is absolutely fine. And if anything, you want to keep as active as possible. So stuff when you've got a dodgy Achilles, like biking or swimming, you know, it doesn't use your Achilles so much, that's great. Or if you can walk half an hour and it doesn't hurt, walk half an hour. If you can even run, like if you're used to running stupidly long distances and you can run like, you know, 3 miles and it doesn't hurt, just run 3 miles, that's absolutely fine. So yes, you relatively offload it. You don't just lie in a bed and do nothing, because then you'll just become weak. So yeah, relative rest, that's a really, really good point. But yeah, if we go on to the rehab protocols, so back in 1998 actually, Alfredson, who's a renowned kind of ankle surgeon, he first recognize that, you know what, Achilles tendons, they need a bit of actual rehab, because at the time back then physiotherapy was all a dark art of ice and stim and ultrasound. And I'm sad to say some people still do that, but that's maybe because tendons are not their thing. Maybe they like, I don't know, knee replacements. But yeah, that isn't, he's the first one who was like, right, this needs some actual rehab, some strengthening. And so he created this eccentric protocol that you will see if you Google stuff. Now, eccentric means that you're working in a lengthening way. So you're sort of, for the point of the heel, you're lowering over a step. So that calf is actually getting longer, but you're standing on it, so it's loaded. And so he was doing the old up on 2 feet, down on 1 foot off the edge of a step. And he set it at like sort of 3 times 15, twice a day. So you end up doing absolutely loads of them, and a 12-week progressive loading program, as in start with body weight, and then as it gets better, you add load. And then that was sort of hailed as this magic cure for Achilles tendinopathy, because all 10 of his subjects in his research study got better. And these days, obviously 10 would be just more like a pilot study. Anyway, that was then replicated lots of times, and it's still used quite a lot now. But as we said, everyone is different. So how can it be that this very prescriptive protocol can get everyone better and it doesn't? And it does get some people better, and some people, like a bell curve, there'll be people that it works really well for. And this, again, just to clarify, this is for people who've had a tendon problem for much longer than a couple of weeks. So I'm talking like a few months or more. And then, you know, Silbernagel came along and they're like, well, hang on, why is it just the eccentric part, the lowering? Why don't we do the concentric part? And actually, if we're getting people back to running, where you have to push off and do stuff that's a bit quicker, why aren't we doing quicker movements? So there's more kind of in line with what we do. So it would be you starting with like low load, what you can tolerate, and then you're building up as you can tolerate. But eventually, before you go back to sport and running, you'd be doing faster movements, jumping, hopping, making sure all that's all right first. So very generically, if you've got a very hurty new tendon, don't do a rehab protocol. Rest it relatively, don't do nothing, but do something and then gradually build yourself back in. If you've had a tendon that's been terrible for ages or annoying you for ages, you could give it a go at doing some progressive loading, as in start off what you can tolerate with some heel raises or heel drops, whichever you prefer. They don't know, there's been a study that looked at both protocols, compared them against each other, and you know, they both get better eventually. So yeah, and then just build yourself back up. And I suppose this is where we would help, because we would take the knowledge of both those rehab protocols and all the other researchy bits, and then also apply clinical experience, because some people, quite frankly, don't get better with either of these protocols. They get better mm-hmm. with just functional stuff, like, right, stop running and then start running a little bit at a time. Some people with the weighted, you know, both of these protocols, you add weight to it. So you either hold a dumbbell, you put weights in a backpack, you gradually increase it as you can tolerate. Some people don't tolerate that at all. Some people just have to go straight from doing body weight stuff to doing sort of hopping, jumping, running, because it just, every time they try and do weighted stuff, it flares them up. So this is where everyone is a bit different. So yeah, but the general, and I'm going back to being generic because I know I want to try and help your listeners, but the very general concept of any of these like protocols, so to speak, are that initially you need to relatively offload it to calm it all down. Then you need to recover. So the next phase, once you've calmed it down, is that you recover some of the strength that you've lost. Then you need to strengthen it, because it wasn't strong in the first place. That's why you had the problem. And then you do a phased return to sport. So that's the general kind of concept for any of these things. Yeah. Does that answer your question? I'm not sure if it does.
I think so.
I think it mainly comes back to people being smart immediately after they realize that they've got an injury, right?
Definitely. So common sense. I think, do you know what I think? And this is just, maybe it's just me. I think everybody thinks they're invincible, right? I'm married to a physio as well, and we're both rubbish. Like if I get injured, I'll be like, I'll be fine. And he has to say, what would you tell a patient? I'm like, oh yeah, okay, I won't run. And I think that's the general thing, isn't it? Everyone thinks, oh, I'll probably be all right. It'll probably go away. And a few weeks later, it'll probably go away. It's just, and that's how it ends up being a chronic problem, because it's never bad enough to really stop you. Well, sometimes it is, but on the whole, it's never bad enough to really stop you until you're good, you know, a couple of months in, and then you're like, oh, actually, now I can't really run more than a couple of miles and it hurts. I better do something about it. Mm. And by that point, it's going to take you a bit longer to do something about it. So I think the lesson there is that just because something hasn't gone away for a couple of weeks, it's all right to just rest it a bit and calm it down and then try and deal with it then, rather than wait, see if you're all right, and then end up not all right.
It often comes in though at a point like when you're building, maybe at your heaviest or highest weeks pre-race, and then you think, oh, I can't, you know, not run. I have a race coming up.
Yeah. And also it will be when you're running your best and you're having a great time.
And that's just not allowing the tendon to be recovering and regenerating.
Yeah. So if we go back to like something you can see like skin, your body is always regenerating all the time, whether it's injured or not. When you're healthy, you know, you're getting rid of old dead tissue and you're laying down new tissue all the time. And it's the same with bones, it's the same with muscles, it's the same with tendons. And your body has this lovely kind of balance of, right, I'm going to break down this much, I'm going to lay this much. And then when you lot come and you do your coaching and you push people and they get stronger, there is a period, isn't there, where you break down the tissue a little bit, but your body's like, well, I need to get stronger, so it builds it up stronger than it was before. And there's some research that shows that process, if you've, you know, heavy loaded or loaded intensely, so this is your higher intensity training, that can take 48 hours, can't it, to regenerate. So if you're not giving it that recovery time, it's breaking down, but then it's breaking down again, and it's not building back up, and you get into this rut. And that's kind of what happens a bit with the tendinopathy, but it's at a low level, so you don't notice it sometimes until it's...
So it's almost staggered behind your training volume. See, whereas you might feel you're recovered mentally, and you feel recovered in a muscular sense, your tendons are playing catch up all the time.
Yeah, exactly. So you need to give them... That comes back to the digging into people's training programs to see why they've got sore. And sometimes it's just, there's just not enough recovery. And that's a lot of the time, actually, there's not enough recovery. And that's another thing about people being different. You know, not everyone can run 40 miles a week. Some people break by that point. So you have to tailor the training then also to people's individual needs, because it could be that the reason the problem came on in the first place is they couldn't actually physically, they could mentally cope with it, but they couldn't physically cope with it. You have to just modify things for them.
That's the hard part. Right. I have one more question. I think Rob might have one as well, but I'll ask mine first. I can't remember where I read this the other day, but it was basically, it was a supplement which was collagen based that claimed to be good for your tendons.
Yeah.
True or false?
Well, I'm not a dietitian, so I couldn't really make a good comment on that. Although, having looked at lots of tendon research, there's nothing to really show that is a proven thing. I think someone's done some heavy marketing on it, perhaps. But
I agree.
You'd have to ask my dietitian friend who knows everything about dietary supplementation. But nothing that I have read recently shows that is a real, scientific proven thing.
Good. Rob,
yeah.
Any other burning questions?
No, actually. I feel like all my questions have been answered in some way.
Yeah. Oh,
brilliant. Yeah.
You've given a great I think people listening to this will...
Ooh, actually no, I do have one. I've written one down that I didn't cover.
Good.
Are there any myths or old wives' tales you hear patients come in with about Achilles injuries that you want to dispel?
Of course. There's so many. Where do I start? Well, you have to be careful here, because I think if someone says that they, you know, rub some magic potion on it and got better, then that's brilliant for them, isn't it? You know, if you can do something really innocuous and it gets it better, then go for it, you know. But I think if you're going to be quite scientific about it, and this is where, you know, rehab science, as you guys probably know, it's not brilliant. So I think it's not a myth, but commonly, and this is one we see a lot, you know, there is a YouTube video out there with someone who tells people to do cross friction massage on a sore tendon. Like, you rub across it really hard, it'll get it better. And I can see that a lot of the time it really doesn't. It just makes it more sore. It'll feel all right when you're doing it, because it'll go numb and then you can't feel it. And then afterwards it'll be sore, because, like, why would you, if you had a bruise, you wouldn't rub on it, would you? So why would you rub on something that's trying to heal? So don't do that. And then other myths. I don't know about other myths. I could tell you about injections if you like.
Go for it.
Let's hear it.
I mean, there's more and more things. Oh yeah, other therapies. These are not myths. These are just other therapies out there that people have come across. So other things that people will come across, people talk about PRP injections. Have you heard of those?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So PRP injections are where they take some of your blood, they spin it around, they get all the good stuff and stick it back in by an injection, basically. And that's always combined then with a rehab exercise protocol. And the jury's out in the research as to whether or not it helps. It will help some people, it won't help others. And you have to also bear in mind, I think, you know, is it that actually they're sticking something in there, and then they are actually following the rehab protocol better because they have to. So that can help some people, but not others. And there's certainly no good research to show that it definitely does help. And that's also the same with shockwave. So shockwave is a new thing that people might come across in certain clinics. Oh, we'll get you better with our magic machine. And again, it might work well for some people and it won't work at all for others. And for some people, it makes it worse. So the only thing that has a good level of evidence in the research time and time again is appropriate rehab with exercise, basically.
I can vouch for shockwave. I had that and it was did nothing, absolutely nothing. And I was, my doctor actually was gonna, the sort of last resort was a PRP injection, but she explained to me, like you have with the fibers and how they should look, and putting a needle into horizontal, nice straight fibers isn't the best thing to do either. And apparently there's quite a high risk of re-injuring post-injury when you're coming back.
Yeah, I think there's always a high risk of re-injury, even if you rehab it through exercise. There's a, I think, a 44% recurrence in this sort of stuff. But that's usually because of training. So this is all like modifiable, a lot of it. But yeah, I think people, the trouble is people look for a quick fix. There isn't really a quick fix. It takes patience. It takes like hard work. There's no magic cure for these things. People would love for there to be a magic cure, but there isn't one. So yeah, these things come and go, you know, like in days of ice and ultrasound and things like that, you know, that was supposed to be a magic fix. And then people realized it wasn't. And these come cyclically because people develop these new things that are exciting. This is gonna fix it. And then 10 years later, they're like, oh, it didn't fix it, exercise.
We'll finish on this. Something else I came across, which is how I found you guys actually, was so I've been suffering with tendon injuries for about a year and a half now. And then April, I decided that, okay, I really need to address this now. And so stopped running, saw a specialist, and I actually had some neovascularization within the tendon. Yeah. So I had the injection that the high volume injection that moves it, that helps to flush away the neovascularization. And then I've been doing, you know, all the rehab protocols you've named, I've been through them, and we're still at a stage where I'm still in pain. So I came across your guys' website because you have a video on silent tendinopathies, which really interested me because it's to do with your nervous system, and in particular for Achilles injury, maybe the sciatica nerve, or the sciatic nerve that becomes a tibialis nerve. When we're looking like at Achilles injury and we get this far down and we're like looking at, okay, your nervous system is having an effect on it, can we say that how you're living life in terms of your daily stress and how your other parts of your body are above the Achilles tendon injury, how much can that be affecting you not getting better?
Oh, it's another really good question. I'm just aware we haven't got loads of time left, but again, I could go off on one. I think I'll keep going off on one, sorry. So there's another good point. So you can have pain in that area that isn't actually your tendon that's a problem. It can be referred pain. It can be sensitization from your nervous system. It can be related to, you know, when you're stressed and you're not sleeping very well, or you're not getting good quality sleep, or just generally if you've got stress hormones flying around your body. Remember I said that hormones can mess things up. You know, stuff just doesn't heal as well, does it? So there's a whole myriad of things that can be going on there. And yeah, this is where you have to unpick these things. Sometimes, you know, if you have got a sciatic nerve problem coming from your lower back, that can lead to, depending on the level. So if it's like L5-S1, which is the bottom of your lower back, that supplies your calf area. So that can give you a little bit of weakness potentially if you've had like a disc prolapse, or if you have just nerve tension because you're sitting all the time, like people who are working from home with a terrible posture, sat at a laptop, you know, end up with lots of nerve tension, things like that. And that can predispose you to getting, you know, pain in certain areas like that. So yeah, there's loads of stuff. This is why it comes back to, if you're not sure and you haven't managed to get yourself better, come and see us. Go and look at treatmyachilles.com. Marika's done loads of amazing videos on there. Like I said, yeah, I'm not quite so good at doing the videos, but I'll give it a good go. And And then, yeah, if you're not sure, just come and see one of us, because it might be that all you need is like a one-off assessment, potentially set you on the right track. And then you know what you're doing then, rather than guessing. I think that's what people do, is they guess, get muddled up, end up doing all sorts of strange things. And then once we just put them straight, it tends to be on the right path then. So
brilliant. Thank you so much for coming on, and you're short on time now. Guys, treatmyachilles.com. There's a big button on there that says book now. Click it and then you'll follow the steps, and you may be lucky enough that you get to speak to Steph.
Brilliant. Thanks Maybe. So much.
Thank you for coming on.
Steph, thank you so much for coming on. And you're hopefully welcome. We'll chat again soon once you've got Crocs banned. That's the goal.
We can have that as a different topic altogether.
Banmycrocs.com.
Rate my Crocs.
Amazing.
Got to be careful with the spelling on that one.
Yeah. Great. On that note. Right.
On that note. Thank you.
Thank you, Steph.
Thanks, Steph.
Brilliant.
How's your notebook, mate? Pretty full?
Yeah. I just keep writing things down. So I've just had... I've written down Alfredston to go and have a look at his stuff, and then
buy Crocs.
Although, do you know what she said? It comes down to it. I'm sure we probably echo the same message. You need to be disciplined. You need to get off it early, and the rehab is simple. There's no fancy. Yeah. Don't really need to do anything fancy, is it? It's basic. Basic.
And your sleep matters. How you sit matters.
Mm-hmm. How you stand, what you wear.
Lifestyle. And what I think it's awesome to have people like that come on the show, because she's obviously so passionate about what she does.
Loves it.
It's amazing. I think people can find that level of passion in getting rehabbed and like sorting out posture and how they might be sitting and being keen to change things, instead of being like, oh, it's just the way it's always been, so I'm going to leave it like that and it'll have to adapt around me.
Mm.
Like give it, see it as a sign you've got a chance to change something up, get better, and stop it from happening again once you do get back to running.
Yeah. I think that's big. I think when people come back from injury, they go back to do the same thing over and over.
Yeah,
and over again.
Exactly.
And then the same thing recurs and they don't know what they've done. I suppose you've realized this now, haven't you, with the issues that you've had, and you've mixed it up and you've made sustainable change. Mm. I know if you look at your Instagram, you'll see all the stuff that you're doing to help rehab, and you're lifting some crazy weights now and putting some crazy...
You raised 120 kgs for 6 reps. No biggie.
I'm just giving you the opportunity to drop that in.
Exactly. No biggie. I sacrificed pull-ups to put the energy into that. Yeah, I think it's very interesting, because I was always the same as well. It's like, okay, I just need to do this rehab protocol and I'll get better. And then suddenly you do it and you're like, well, I'm not getting better. Okay, do shockwave. It'll be better. All right, let's do that. It's not better. Do this high volume injection. It'll be better. Sweet. I'll be running in 2 weeks. Nope. 6 weeks later, still not good. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what is the real basic things that we need to be doing here, and just keep executing on it and stop looking for that magic bullet? Because like Steph said, it's not really going to help. You've got to make sure your sleep's good. You've got to make sure that your nervous system is in the right place to be repairing, and then follow the most sort of basic protocol you can, as she says, which is deload and then reload, and you never know, might work out.
Mm-hmm. And relative rest. I like that phrase.
Yeah, that is an interesting phrase.
Relative rest. As long as it's that was really interesting. So you said relative rest might still mean you're running, but it's pain free.
Yeah.
You don't need to down old tools and stop completely necessarily, as long as it doesn't hurt, which I thought.
I can't remember the last time I ran pain free. Genuinely can't tell you. It was in 2020.
Wow.
Mm. How's that?
Getting close to 3 years. Well, 2.5 now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Year and a half. So 2021, last year, I didn't have a pain-free run. Mad.
Mm.
But we put up with it because we have our eyes on a goal.
Yeah.
But maybe we shouldn't. But maybe we should. Guys,
you've asked me, I'm not buying into any of your deep questions today. I'm already traumatized.
Deep question Monday that comes out on a Wednesday. That's our new thing.
I like it.
That's it. We will, mate, next week you're in Chamonix.
Mm,
I am going to the UK for a week. we'll do a pod. We'll get your update on, you won't have started the camp, but you'll have been there for a week. So we'll get an update on what's happening.
All the routes will have been checked. We'll know what the courses are like and everyone will be arriving.
I'll have some form of story from the UK that we'll share. And guys, if you are interested to speak to Steph, you can. She works remotely, so it's all online. treatmyachilles.com. And it is very simple. You go on there, you have a look. They have different range of physios and you just click through, book now. And they also have a great YouTube channel. So from their website, go to their YouTube page and they've got tons of videos on there that basically are very short versions of what Steph's just talked about us today.
Yep.
Good. Then that's it. 135 in the books. We'll be back next week. If you have anything you'd like to say to the show, you can. endurance@innerfight.com. Rob Jones is on Instagram, Rob Jones Endurance, or rj@innerfight.com on the old email. Or if you want to catch me, twinnerfight.com and Tom Walker Fitness on Instagram. Thank you very much for listening. We will be back next week.
Thank you.